You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
The top national and international headlines, that's what you can expect on Editor's Pick of the Day on Money Control. Welcome to this podcast. I'm Sheetal. And as always, let's get you started with the top business headlines from India.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
So India aims to sell two or three state-owned firms to local or foreign firms to raise apparently up to 600 billion rupees, that's $8.5 billion, and this is by March of 2020, according to a senior finance ministry official. So the government has planned to sell Bharat Petroleum Corporation Limited, that's BPCL, then the logistics firm, that's Container Corporation of India Limited, and the debt-laden Air India. This is before the end of the 2019-20 financial year, according to the same official. So the Prime Minister's office had voiced reservations about the Finance Ministry's past sales of stakes in one state entity to another, which was the case when refiner Hindustan Petroleum was sold to ONGC, that's Oil and Natural Gas Corporation Limited, according to this official. And we quote, "The PMO is very clear that we cannot be selling government companies to another government company and then call it privatization," unquote. The government is expecting a shortfall of around 40,000 crore rupees in the GST collections over what has been budgeted for 2019-20. Now, this is what could put pressure on the compensation that states are eligible for in case the tax growth falls below 14% during the year. As part of the GST bargain, the center had agreed to compensate states for 5 years if the annual increase in revenues was less than 14%. Now, under the agreement, payment of compensation only flows from a fund where the cess is collected. So the centre has estimated a collection of 1 lakh crore cess on sin and luxury goods in 2019-20. That's about 8,000 crore rupees a month. And the collection in August was around 7,272 crore rupees, triggering the possibility of a lower than budgeted collection. So in the next 4 months of the year, the centre has released 45,784 crore rupees as compensation to states. And the states are also demanding that the compensation period be extended by another 3 years. The government has said that it expects revenues to rebound when growth picks up in the coming quarters and is also hopeful of robust GST collections. It is taking measures, it says, to plug loopholes and stamp out fraud claims. India's fledgling electric vehicle industry is likely to receive a much-needed shot in the arm with the slashing of corporate tax on new manufacturing companies, with most makers of electric vehicles and their components planning their investments for India. They would be encouraged to accelerate their plans for local manufacturing. So the steps are expected to propel domestic production, specifically in producing lithium-ion batteries, charging equipment, electrical and electronic parts. And producers of hybrids and even conventional internal combustion vehicles will also benefit. We quote Vinnie Mehta, Director General of Automotive Component Manufacturers Association of India, or ACMA. "With the falling rupee, imports have become expensive. Logically, the manufacturing companies will look at increasing localization of components in India under the newly announced tax regime for new units. This will boost overall manufacturing activities," unquote. The auto industry, along with its vast auto ancillary supply chain, accounts for 49% of India's manufacturing GDP. Earlier, the union government had allotted 10,000 crore rupees to accelerate EV adoption in India under the Faster Adoption and Manufacturing of Hybrid and Electric Vehicles in India, or FAME II scheme. That's quite a mouthful. But yeah, in her maiden budget presented in July, the finance minister offered income tax rebates of up to 1.5 lakh rupees to customers on interest paid on loans to buy electric vehicles, with a total exemption benefit of 2.5 lakh rupees over the entire loan period. There is also customs duty exemption on lithium-ion cells, which will help lower the cost of lithium-ion batteries in India, as they are not produced locally. Manufacturers of components such as solar electric charging infrastructure and lithium storage batteries and other components will be offered investment-linked income tax exemptions under Section 35AD of the Income Tax Act and other indirect tax benefits. In other headlines in India, well, the terror camp in Pakistan's Balakot, bombed by India in February, has been reactivated very recently, according to Army Chief Bipin Rawat. He also said that about 500 terrorists were waiting to infiltrate India. The Army Chief's comments come days before Prime Minister Narendra Modi is to address the United Nations General Assembly. Now, yesterday at the mega Howdy Modi event that happened in Houston, where he shared a stage with US President Donald Trump, the Prime Minister took on Pakistan and said that it was time to fight against terrorism and those who supported terror. At the UN later this week, Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan is set to speak after Prime Minister Modi is likely to try and bring up India's move to scrap special status to Jammu and Kashmir under Article 370 and divide it into two union territories. Pakistan's move to reactivate the Balakot Jaish camp belies its commitment to the international community on not giving shelter to terrorists on its soil. Pakistan has been placed on an enhanced blacklist by the global terror financing watchdog, that's Financial Action Task Force, or FATF. A 15-month deadline for Pakistan to act on FATF's 27-point action plan, which includes arresting terrorists and freezing their fund sources, ends in October. Not meeting the FATF's target will lead to Pakistan being downgraded by the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank and Asian Development Bank, besides facing negative assessments by credit rating agencies such as Moody's, Standard & Poor's and Fitch. Now, this is expected to add to the financial burden of Pakistan, which is seeking aid from all possible international sources to overcome economic slowdown. The Supreme Court today issued a general reprimand against interference in judicial appointments and transfers, saying that such intrusions do not augur well for the institution. The admonishment from a bench led by Chief Justice of India, Ranjan Gogoi, came in a petition filed by the Gujarat High Court Advocates Association regarding a proposed appointment of Justice A.A. Qureshi. The Supreme Court Collegium has come under intense public criticism with its September 5th recommendation to modify its May 10th, 2019 proposal to transfer Justice Qureshi to the Madhya Pradesh High Court as Chief Justice and instead shift him to the Tripura High Court. The Collegium had changed its mind after the government expressed its displeasure in two back-to-back letters on the 23rd and 27th of August about Justice Qureshi taking charge of the Madhya Pradesh High Court. Recently, Justice V.K. Tahil Ramani chose to resign as the Madras High Court Chief Justice when the Collegium proposed her transfer to Meghalaya High Court. With many lawyers from the Madras High Court bar opposing the transfer, the Supreme Court was compelled to issue a statement that Justice Tahil Ramani's transfer was in the best interests of administration of justice, offering to reveal the reasons for the proposal. It is in the background of this rollercoaster flow of events that Chief Justice Gogoi made this observation. Justice Qureshi is presently the most senior judge from the Gujarat High Court. The September 5th Collegium resolution does not disclose any reason for the sudden change of mind and came in the weekend before the three-judge bench was scheduled to hear the Gujarat lawyers' plea. The Lawyers Association had been criticizing the government's unexplained delay in taking a call in Justice Qureshi's elevation, while those of other judges who were recommended along with him have sailed through. Moving on to international headlines next, specifically business first on Editor's Pick of the Day. German PMI, or business sentiment, last month showed its lowest reading since October of 2012, and the sentiment among manufacturers took the biggest hit, posting its lowest level of factory activity since the depths of the financial crisis, according to IHS Markit. The flash reading of price manufacturing index for September across all sectors was at 49.1, down from 51.7 in August. Now, much of this decline has been put down to external uncertainties in the form of the trade war between US and China and Britain's plan to exit the European Union. All three countries have reduced the number of orders from Germany, hurting Europe's biggest economy. Now, PMI is a tool that is used by economists to see how the company is faring by assessing how managers are feeling about the future. Now, the September flash reading marked Germany's first reading below the 50 threshold, which really is a major sign of decline. The euro fell 0.4% against the dollar on the back of this news. IHS Markit blamed both sharp falls in manufacturing and services, with manufacturing recording an eighth straight monthly decrease in output. Now, what makes this reading even more unnerving is that Germany's economy is heavily reliant on manufacturing. About 50% of the GDP there is made up by industry, so a decline in manufacturing can pull the entire economy down with it. Despite the Federal Reserve's latest efforts to boost the economy, long-term market bear David Rosenberg warns that a recession is coming. The Gluskin chef, a chief economist and strategist, predicts economic growth in the US will turn negative sooner than most investors anticipate, setting the stage for a painful market pullback. According to Rosenberg, a recession is coming in the next 12 months. Now, the Fed lowered its benchmark interest rate last Wednesday by a quarter point, and Fed Chairman Jerome Powell signaled that rates would only be cut again if there is new evidence that the economy is softening. But Powell also said that he didn't expect that to happen. We quote Rosenberg, "The only reason that he said he's optimistic on the outlook is because of exactly what the Fed is doing, which is breathing stimulus back into the economy," unquote. Rosenberg came into 2019 with a recession warning and has been known as a perma bear on Wall Street for decades. Yet, US growth hasn't gone negative this year. Plus, the S&P 500 and Dow are up more than 19% and 15% respectively. But according to Rosenberg, it's just a matter of time until economic data sours and Powell is forced to resume easing in the coming months. Whether the Fed cuts all the way to zero or not, Rosenberg speculates that the outcome will be the same, recession. He pointed out that the economy was already slowing down and earnings actually contracting. As U.S. President Donald Trump puts pressure on Beijing to end unfair business practices, the Department of Justice has a warning for companies: bolster your defenses. U.S. Deputy Assistant Attorney General Adam Hickey said that more cases are being opened that implicate trade secret theft, and more of them point to China. Since 2012, more than 80% of economic espionage cases brought by the department's National Security Division have implicated China. The frequency of the cases has been rising in recent years, according to Hickey. The Justice Department launched the China Initiative in November 2018 with the aim of countering Chinese national security threats, and it does so by identifying and prosecuting trade secret and intellectual property theft, hacking, and economic espionage. The Justice Department's China Initiative also puts an emphasis on cybersecurity threats and telecommunication vulnerabilities. Hickey also weighed in on the perceived threat to national security from telecom companies and supply chains more broadly. He said, and we quote him, "It is going to matter where that company is located and whether they can be leveraged to comply with an intelligence service without regard to the rule of law that has to be relevant," unquote. Hickey stressed the need to not only look at whether there is a so-called backdoor or an intentional vulnerability, but also at whether there's intent and capability of a government to leverage that company. In other international news, Thomas Cook, the world's oldest travel firm, collapsed today, stranding hundreds of thousands of holidaymakers around the world. Chief executive Peter Fankhauser said that it was a matter of profound regret that the company had gone out of business after it failed to secure a rescue package from its lenders. The demise of Thomas Cook marks the end of one of Britain's oldest companies that started life in 1841, running local rail excursions before it survived two world wars to pioneer package holidays, first in Europe and then further afield. The firm runs hotels, resorts and airlines for 19 million people a year in 16 countries. It currently has 600,000 people abroad, forcing governments and insurance companies to coordinate a huge rescue operation. Crippled by its £1.7 billion of debt, Thomas Cook has been hit by online competition, a changing travel market, and geopolitical events that can upend its summer season. Now, last year's European heatwave also hit this company hard, with customers putting off last-minute bookings. The corporate collapse has the potential to spark chaotic scenes around the world, with holidaymakers stuck in hotels that have not been paid for in locations as far as Goa, Gambia, and Greece. In the long term, it could also hit the economies of its biggest destinations, such as Spain and Turkey, leave fuel suppliers out of pocket, and force the closure of its hundreds of travel agents across British high streets. While Thomas Cook collapsed, Thomas Cook India Group has not been impacted because it is an entirely different entity since August 2012 when it was acquired by Fairfax Financial Holdings, a Canada-based multinational investment company. Amazon's Fleabag stole the show at the 71st Primetime Emmy Awards, bringing home four awards, including those for Best Actress in a Comedy, Directing, and Best Comedy Series. The show, which centers around a dry-witted, grief-riddled, and promiscuous British woman living in London, earned the writer and star Phoebe Waller-Bridge the Outstanding Writing Award. However, it was her win for lead actress that was unexpected. Many had anticipated that this award would either go to Rachel Brosnan from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel or to Julia Louis-Dreyfus from The Veep. One of the biggest questions of the night was how many trophies Game of Thrones would bring home. Heading into the ceremony, the HBO show had 32 nominations for long-running drama. The show earned 10 Emmys during the Creative Emmy Awards ceremony earlier this month and tacked on another two during the broadcast. Peter Dinklage won for Best Supporting Actor for his portrayal of Tyrion Lannister, and the show won the Outstanding Drama Prize as well. In the category for Limited Series and TV Movies, Chernobyl, A Very English Scandal, When They See Us, and The Act took home awards. Top things in tech, coming up next. According to a report in the Financial Times, a team of researchers from Google led by John Martinez have demonstrated quantum supremacy for the very first time. Now, this is the point at which a quantum computer is shown to be capable of performing a task that's beyond the reach of even the most powerful conventional supercomputer. Google had struck an agreement last year to use supercomputers available to NASA as benchmarks for its supremacy experiments. And according to the Financial Times report, the paper said that Google's quantum processor was able to perform a calculation in 3 minutes and 20 seconds that would take today's most advanced supercomputer, that's known as Summit, by the way, around 10,000 years. 3 minutes and 20 seconds, 10,000 years, just for comparison. So the researchers said that according to their knowledge, the experiment marks the first computation that can only be performed on a quantum processor, unquote. Now, a little about quantum machines. These are so powerful because they harness quantum bits or qubits. Now, unlike classical bits, which are either a one or a zero, qubits can be a kind of a combination of both at the same time. Thanks to another quantum phenomena, quantum computers can crunch large amounts of data in parallel that conventional machines have to work through sequentially. Scientists have been working for years to demonstrate that machines can definitively outperform conventional ones. Will Oliver, an MIT professor and quantum specialist, said that this computing milestone would give added impetus to research in this field, and quantum computing's immense processing power could ultimately help researchers and companies discover new drugs and materials, create more efficient supply chains, and turbocharge AI. The Old Guitarist is probably the most famous painting from Picasso's Blue Period. It dates from 1903-1904, when the young artist was living in poverty in Paris. Now, Picasso used the color blue to represent the emotional pain and desolation that he was experiencing at the time. But The Old Guitarist is interesting for another reason: the presence of a ghostly woman's face faintly visible beneath the paint. In 1998, conservators at the Art Institute of Chicago, where the painting hangs, photographed it using X-rays and infrared light to see what lies beneath the surface. And these images show an entirely different painting, which depicts a seated woman holding out her left arm. But the infrared and X-ray images show little more than the faintest of outlines. Researchers at University College London have now used a machine vision technique called neural style transfer to retrieve the lost Picasso painting in color for the very first time. And these researchers have used the same technique to retrieve lost paintings by other artists and say that it has the potential to transform the way art historians work. Now, neural style transfer was developed as a technique in 2015 by Leon Gattis and his colleagues at the University of Tübingen in Germany, and it comes from a fascinating insight into the way neural networks learn to recognize images of different kinds. Now, neural networks consist of layers that analyze an image at different scales. Successive layers might recognize broad features like edges, how these edges form simple shapes like circles, patterns of shapes, and how two circles might be eyes, etc. Now, this kind of network would be able to recognize eyes in a painting in a wide variety of styles, from Da Vinci to Van Gogh to Picasso. Now, in each case, the eyes form a similar pattern that the machine can then pick out. Gattis and other researchers went further by training such a network to recognize artistic style, for example, to distinguish a Van Gogh from a Picasso. They were able to separate this ability and use it in reverse. They fed a picture into the neural network, which then superimposed the style into the image. And this process allowed them to convert any image into the style of another artist. Now, this work has been hugely influential, as expected, and various groups have used it to produce artworks, comics, or even movies in the style of any chosen artist. And finally, a look at the markets on Editor's Pick of the Day. So the benchmark indices traded nearly 3% higher in afternoon deals today. The Sensex wrapped up the day at 39,123 and the Nifty at 11,602, both of them up in the region of 2.91%. So in the broader market, you had the mid-cap index gaining 2.4%, whereas the BSE small cap gained about 1.7% today. Shares of hotel companies rallied up to 16% on the Bombay Stock Exchange in early morning deals after the Goods and Services Tax Council approved a proposal to cut tax rates on hotel tariffs. And then shares of Reliance Capital hit an over 20-year low of 28.40 rupees. That's down 9% on the Bombay Stock Exchange after CARE Ratings downgraded the company's debt programs worth about 17,000 crores to D on account of a recent instance of a delay in servicing of coupon on several non-convertible debentures. And that's really pretty much a roundup of the market story today. Thank you for listening to Editor's Pick of the Day. We'll be back tomorrow.
This has been today's Editor's Pick. And you've been listening to Money Control.
And now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.